Welcome to What Your GP Doesn't Tell You, the podcast for both doctors and patients with me, Liz Tucker. After my recent podcast about weight loss drugs, I wanted to follow up the subject with an interview with this week's guest, Dr. Jason Fung. Jason argues that much of what we think we know about weight loss is simply wrong, and that dieting may actually make the problem worse, not better. And that matters, not for some frivolous cosmetic reason, but because soaring obesity rates across the world are linked to a huge range of health conditions. So is it possible that the billion-dollar diet industry and the beliefs it propagates is based on a mistaken premise, and that actually it's not calorie counting that's key to weight loss, but hormones? But before we get into more details about this week's show, I want to say a huge thank you to all my subscribers, followers, and Patreon supporters. I really appreciate all your support. Thank you so much to everyone who's been in touch to say how much they value the podcast. And what would really help me and expose the podcast to new listeners would be, in addition to that private support, if you could please spare the time to leave reviews about the podcast on Spotify and Apple and share it with your friends. It really helps raise awareness about the podcast. Thank you. And now the embarrassing part, the request for funding. I hope it's now clear the level of research and work that goes into each podcast episode. I'd like, if I can, to avoid the podcast becoming exclusively available for financial supporters. So to continue to be able to do this, I do need funding. So even if it's only a dollar or pound or two a month, it makes a huge difference. And the details of how to become a financial supporter are on my podcast website, whatyourgpdoesnttellyou.com. And now back to this week's show. Jason argues that the critical factor in losing weight is hormones. He says calorie counting is an overly simplistic approach, and that actually dieting may be the worst thing you can do because it slows your metabolic rate, which actually makes it harder to reduce weight in the future. Jason argues that the science reveals that we all have what is effectively a sort of fat thermostat in our bodies. This tries to keep our bodies to a particular set key weight. So try to lose weight, and our metabolism will do its very best to sabotage this. That means it's harder for us to reduce our weight and easier for us to regain it. So if that's the case, is there any way we can reset this internal thermostat so that we can lose weight? Or are we doomed forever to be caught in a vicious cycle of dieting and weight gain? Jason argues there is a solution, and it involves both changing what we eat and when we eat. Jason, who's based in Toronto, Canada, is a kidney specialist and an expert in intermittent fasting. He believes that many of today's chronic medical issues are related to diet and obesity, and says that a dietary problem needs a dietary solution. He's the author of a number of best-selling books, the scientific editor of the Journal of Insulin Resistance, and the managing director of the non-profit organisation Public Health Collaboration Canada. Here's his interview. So Jason, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Jason, your argument really is that the entire premise of dieting is false, that the amount of body fat we carry is controlled through a mechanism like a sort of fat thermostat, and it's not simply the result of how many calories we eat and burn.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important to understand that if our body fat is under sort of a control, like thermostat, for example. You know, in your room, you have a thermostat that you set the room temperature and then it will adjust. That is, if it gets too hot, it's turned on the air conditioning and cool it. If it gets too cold, it's going to turn on the heat and warm it up. So if you think about the room, for example, you might say, have an argument that, hey, the temperature in your room is simply the result of heat in minus heat out. Well, that's obviously true, right? Okay. The temperature in the room is too cold. So I'm going to bring in a little heater, plug it in, turn on the heat, because it's all about heat in minus heat out, right? So I'm going to just increase heat in. It's going to warm up the room. It does at first, but then the thermostat kicks in, turns on the air conditioning, and cools the room back to the temperature. There's a control mechanism that is, you bring extra heat, it turns on extra air conditioning, and that room temperature doesn't change. Our bodies are the same. If you simply cut down your calories, so suppose you are 180 pounds and you want to get down to 170 pounds. your body fat thermostat is set at 180 pounds, but you decide, okay, I'm just going to cut my calories, right? It's all about calories in minus calories out. So you cut your calories and you start to lose some weight. But then what the body does is it makes you hungry. And if you get hungry, you try and eat more, but you're really strong willpower. So you still eat very few calories so that you maintain this weight loss, which again works for a little bit. Then your body says, well, the thermostat senses that you're below 180 pounds and then says, okay, well, if you're not going to eat more, I'm simply going to burn less. That is, I'm going to turn down the amount of energy that I use in a day. So suppose you're eating 2000 calories in a day, you eat 1500, you lose a few pounds, the body fat thermostat senses that and says, well, since you're not eating more than 1500, I need to get back up to 180 pounds. I'm going to drop how much I burn down to 1400 calories so that you get back to the original weight. People think that the amount of calories you burn in terms of metabolism is set, but it's obviously not. There's a huge range. We've known this for at least 100 years, so I don't know why people don't acknowledge that. But the amount of calories that you burn in a day, which is not exercise, this is just like your brain, your heart, your liver, your kidneys, the energy that those take, that can change plus or minus like 40%. So there's a huge, huge range. That could probably go down more. I know people who have had their metabolisms measured and they're burning like 900 calories a day. So they say, oh, I'm not eating. It's like, yes, I know, because you're simply not burning. Your metabolism's turned down so low. So the presence of this body fat thermostat means that you simply cannot just adjust it, just like you can't bring in a little heater into that room. The calories, people always come back to physics. And I'm always like, this is not physics. Like nothing breaks the rules of physics. So the whole idea is, how are you going to adjust that thermostat, right? What is going to make it go up? What is going to make it go down? And that is the way to successfully adjust your body weight, not simply counting your calories, because that's a very, very crude and ineffective way to do things. And ultimately, it never works because of the existence of this thermostat.
But Jason, the global diet industry is huge. I looked up the figures. It was worth $190 billion in 2023. It employs many experts and scientists. How can they all be so wrong?
The scientific evidence for these ideas have been known for ages. People talk around it. Oh, you're shutting down your metabolism. You know, you're going into starvation mode, all this sort of stuff. But when it comes down to acknowledging his existence and trying to understand it, that's where people come all the way back to, oh, it's all about calories in, calories out. The idea of calories is that it's a unit of energy, but it doesn't tell you anything about how your body is using that energy. Is it using it to generate body heat, or is it storing it as body fat? Because they're very different, obviously. But your body does decide which one it does. So when it's trying to raise your weight, for example, because you've dropped below your set weight, it's going to tend to store it as body fat. When you go above that weight, and there's been elegant studies published in the most prestigious journal. So this was in the New England Journal of Medicine. They've published it. If you go above your dry weight, so if you force feed somebody and you make them gain weight, then their metabolic rate goes up. It goes up like 500 calories a day as the body tries to burn off that excess. So it sets the weight, then when it senses you're above the weight, it'll cut down your hunger so you eat less. And again, we know this happens. That's the whole story of leptin.
Which is a hormone.
Yeah, it's a hormone. So everything comes down to hormones because the body set weight, your thermostat is really set by hormones. Everything in our body is run by hormones. And so we know that in the normal situation, what happens is that your body is at a certain weight. When you get above that weight, your fat cells get bigger. Your fat cells increase the amount of leptin. Leptin goes to the brain, tells you, you need to get the weight down. It cuts down your hunger so you don't eat. And then your weight drifts back down to normal. When you look at overfeeding studies, because there's this argument, people say, well, we're evolved to gain weight. Now that food is easily available, we're always going to gain weight. That's completely false. Because if you look at wild animals, none of them are morbidly obese. Why? Because the amount of body fat you carry has a huge implication for your survival. If you have a fat lion, it's not going to be able to catch anything. If you have a fat antelope, it's not going to be able to run away. So the amount of body fat that they carry is very, very tightly regulated. If you have a very skinny lion, again, it's not going to survive. It's not going to have enough energy stores if it doesn't catch food. Same for a thin antelope. So it can't be too thin, can't be too fat, must be controlled. And if you think about how tightly you control, so suppose that you don't gain or lose weight in a year, 2000 calories a day, 365 days a year, you know, something like 70,000 calories. So if you don't gain or lose weight, do you think out of those 70,000 calories, you're able to match it so closely without even knowing? When you look at a piece of food, you have no idea how many calories are in there, because that drink could be 0 calories or it could be 1,000 calories. A diet soda versus a regular soda full of sugar. You have no idea. And yet you match it so closely just by adding it up that you get like not even a 1% error rate. You think that's actually what happens? There is no possible way that happens. The only possible way it happens is that your brain has a homeostatic mechanism. A homeostatic mechanism is just a fancy word for a thermostat. Almost all our systems in our body run like that. You know, there's no system in the body that's run without our hormones. It's just what is perturbing the system that is setting you too high or too low. So it's all about the hormones, not the calories. And it's the hormones that control the calories. So it's not that you're breaking the laws of physics. It's that what you're trying to do is go that one level deeper into understanding. So you say body fat equals calories in minus calories out. That's true. Absolutely true. But what you're trying to do is understand at a deeper level what is controlling the calories in, that is your hunger, your satiety, which is all hormonally driven, and what is controlling your metabolism, which again is all hormonally driven. You can't decide to be less hungry. You can't decide to increase the body heat you generate. It's not possible. But see, the thing is that if calories is the sort of first layer, what you're trying to get is to the root cause, which is that deeper level of control, which is that second layer.
Just to go back to the diet industry for a moment, you say that people have known this for a long time. But I think if you ask most people about their perception about the diet industry and generally speaking how it works, it all appears to be about calorie counting.
Yeah.
And you're basically saying the key to weight loss is hormones, not calories, although obviously calories play a part.
Yeah. So if you have a generation of doctors and dietitians and so on who are raised on calorie counting, they're not going to give up very easily because they think that that is ultimately what it comes down to. What they don't understand is that they're looking at the superficial sort of calories in, calories out.
Or saying eat less, move more.
Yeah, and it doesn't work. That's the problem. It's not until you get to that deeper level of understanding what's causing the problem that you can actually start to fix it. But the foods that you eat do play a role because the foods that you eat have completely different hormonal effects. And that's not for debate. That's simply a fact. You eat, for example, a slice of bread. There are certain changes in certain hormones, like insulin, for example, that are going to be extremely different than you if you ate a piece of salmon. So you take 100 calories of cookies, chocolate chip cookies. The minute you put it in your mouth, you're going to get an entirely different hormonal response than if you ate 100 calories of egg, for example. So people who say it's all about the calories, all calories are equally fattening. So eating broccoli is the same as eating chips or eating French fries.
Well, that's surely been a key part of the dietary industry, that a calorie of fat equals a calorie of protein equals a calorie of carbohydrate.
Yeah, but the hormonal effect of the carbs, and it's much more complicated than simply the carbs versus fat versus protein, because it's a type of carbs, it's a types of proteins, types of fats. So everybody wants to dumb it down into this sort of simplistic notion of calories in, calories out, because it seems like it should be true. But if you actually thought about it for more than 10 seconds, you would realize, and I think it was driven in large part by a lot of the snack food companies and soda companies, they tried to make 100 calories of sugary drink equal to 100 grams of salmon or 100 grams of broccoli. And obviously, if you just asked your grandmother, she would have told you, nobody ever gets fat eating broccoli. It doesn't happen. Why? Because when you eat broccoli, there's such a different hormonal response, and the hormones are changed in a way that doesn't encourage gaining body fat.
Also, that would be quite difficult for me to eat enough calories of broccoli to be at risk of putting on weight, whereas eating that same amount of chocolate would be quite easy.
Exactly. When you eat chocolate versus broccoli, there's a whole cascade of effects. In addition to how it gets metabolized, it affects your satiety differently. So if you eat 100 calories of protein, for example, you're going to trigger a hormone called peptide YY, which is a satiety hormone, which makes you full. If you eat fat, you may trigger cholecystokinin, which again makes you full. If you eat carbs, but very high fiber and very unrefined, you'll fill up your stomach. You'll activate stretch receptors in the stomach, which again, tell your body to stop eating. So there are foods that are very highly processed, which take out all the fiber, all the protein, all the fat, you know, something like a chocolate chip cookie. And you eat it. And yes, you do get those calories, but you get no satiety. So if you don't feel full, you're going to keep eating. Say you're eating really whole food, plant-based, which is a really reasonably healthy diet, or carnivore, which is another diet that's on the other extreme. Both of those are natural foods, and they set off all kinds of satiety signaling. So the whole food, plant-based, eats a lot of bulky foods. They set off all these stretch receptors in the stomach. You can only eat a certain amount before you have to stop. Same thing with the carnivore diet. You eat a certain amount of meat. There's only a certain amount that you can eat before you actually have to stop. Your satiety hormones are just overloaded. They're just saying, stop, stop, stop. So those satiety signals are not weak. They're very, very strong. Why? Because your body wants you to maintain a certain level of body fat. If you eat salmon and salad, you'll be full. If you eat ice cream, same amount of calories, you are going to be looking for something to eat 30 minutes down the line because there's no satiety signaling there. I remember when I was a kid, you know, you'd eat your full dinner and then you'd ask for dessert. Your parents would say, why didn't you eat enough dinner? And we're all like, yeah, but you have a second stomach for dessert. It's true because it's the hormones that you set off. Everything runs on hormones.
So Jason, the result of all this means with dieting, typically there's a weight loss pattern. Somebody will lose weight perhaps for the first few months as they decrease their calories. But then this mechanism kicks in, causes their appetite to increase. They eat more, which eventually causes their weight loss to plateau. And after that, they then regain their weight.
Yeah, it's not just about being more hungry. So we know they get more hungry. And this is not like some psychological voodoo. You can measure the hunger signaling. So for example, you take somebody, you make them lose weight by cutting their calories, but you haven't changed that thermostat. So their thermostat is still set at that higher level. So the thing is that when you do that, the body makes you more hungry. And it does that by sending out hormonal signalers. So you look at something like ghrelin, for example, and they've done this study where they measure ghrelin. Even a year after somebody has lost weight, their ghrelin level, which is called the hunger hormone. So the higher it is, the more hungry you are, the higher their ghrelin. Therefore, they're more hungry. Therefore, they are going to have a lot harder time to resist eating that donut that gets plopped in front of us. It's as simple as that. It's a hormonal problem. It's not a willpower problem. Therefore, they cannot resist tempting foods to the same extent that I can if I am full.
So actually what's happened is the dieting has made things worse for them in many ways.
Yeah. The calorie restricted dieting, if you're simply trying to attack the calorie problem, it's going to make things worse as opposed to trying to figure out what it is that's causing the hormones to be out of whack in the first place. For example, insulin plays a big role in adjusting this thermostat. So remember, if you gain weight, it means that your thermostat is set too high. It will automatically adjust your calories so that you get to this higher weight. So I can take somebody, and they've done this study too, which is fascinating. Insulin is a hormone. levels of hormone that are too high are bad and levels that are too low are bad. And that's the same for every hormone. So if you have growth hormone and you have too much, you get gigantism. If you have too low, you have small stature. If you have thyroid hormone and it's too high, you're hyperthyroid. If it's too low, you're hypothyroid. And you look at what is insulin's job. Insulin's job is to tell your body to store calories. That's its job. So when you eat, insulin goes up, you store calories. When it goes down, when you're not eating, then it's going to burn calories. Okay, so what happens if you have an abnormally high insulin level? Well, you're telling your body,
put on fat.
Yeah, to store more fat. So you say, okay, so do I have proof that insulin causes weight gain? Well, if you want to prove it, you simply take people, give them insulin, and see if they gain weight. Then you know if it's a causal relationship. Turns out that every single study in the last 103 years since insulin's discovery has shown that taking insulin makes people gain weight. Doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how much willpower you have. Doesn't matter how much exercise you do. If I give you insulin, you will gain weight. That's just the bottom line.
Which explains why diabetic patients put on weight.
Type 2 diabetics, yeah. So their insulin levels are already high and people, because their sugars are high, they'll give them more insulin. And when they take more insulin, they actually gain quite a bit of weight. Every patient, every family, every doctor already knows. It's not even for a debate. So then how do you not say that this is it's not the only factor, but it's one of the factors that causes people to gain weight. And that means that the insulin is sort of moving that thermostat upwards. And if you take away insulin, if you have people that have too little insulin, what happens? Well, they lose weight. So type 1 diabetics who don't have insulin and you don't treat them, they will keep losing weight until they die because they cannot store calories. They cannot store body fat. Some type 1 diabetics, they have this eating disorder where they deliberately sort of underdose themselves with insulin to lose weight. It's quite destructive, but it's very effective. So if you have too much insulin, it moves the thermostat up. If you have too little insulin, it moves the thermostat down.
So Jason, what causes insulin to go up or down?
Well, there's a couple of factors. One is the types of food that you eat. So if you're eating a lot of carbohydrates, for example, especially the refined carbohydrates, they will make your insulin go up much higher. If you're eating very frequently, well, when you eat, insulin goes up. If you eat 10 times a day, your insulin is going to go up 10 times a day. So you look at what happened in 1977. 1977, the US government releases the dietary guidelines for Americans, tells people to eat 60% carbohydrates. If you look at the food pyramid that came out shortly thereafter, the bottom row of the food pyramid, 7 to 11 servings a day, it's not broccoli and cabbage. It's bread, rice, pasta, highly refined carbohydrates. So here's a natural experiment. We told people, instead of eating what they were eating in the past, we said, forget what you're eating in the past. Eat mostly 60% highly refined carbohydrates as the base of your diet because it's low in fat. And what happened? Well, obesity sort of exploded. People didn't want to gain weight. They didn't have less willpower than they had before. They're gaining weight because they're eating foods that naturally stimulate more insulin. You have more insulin, so you are storing more fat because you are telling your body to store more fat because the foods that you ate tell your body to store more fat.
But on the other hand, Jason, if we have this set fat thermostat, that should make it harder for us to put on weight. But many people would say, how come then it's so easy for us to put on weight now?
Because we've been upping the thermostat. Our thermostat is set so high because it's all in the foods that we're eating. A lot of the foods are just very, very stimulating to insulin. The other thing that happens, of course, is that if you eat very frequently, your insulin's going to go up. So insulin is about adjusting that thermostat up. Therefore, it's very easy to gain weight. If you eat 10 times a day, then you're spiking insulin 10 times a day. So therefore, if your insulin levels are higher, then your thermostat's going to go up. And you look, in the 70s, people are eating 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner. You look at 2001, 2010, people are eating about 6 times a day on average. So that means breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, snack. There's no period of the day where it's not acceptable to eat. So it's even in the schools. My kids are older now, but I used to get these notes. We're going on a trip. please send two snacks with your kids. I'm like, why? Are they not eating lunch? Or am I not feeding them dinner? Like, which one is it? Why do they need a snack? But that's not the message. The message that comes home to parents and to kids is that everybody must be eating at all times of the day.
People can't go to a 2-hour film without having a number of snacks accompanying it.
Exactly. People think they will die if they don't start stuffing food in their mouth every 90 minutes. Why do you think your body carries body fat? Your body fat is there so that if you don't eat, you can pull energy, calories, out from body fat. But if you never give it a chance to pull the body fat out, it cannot happen. Because when you eat, insulin goes up. Insulin actually stops you from burning fat. Why? Because insulin tells you to store fat, not burn it. The diet industry loves to talk about calories so that they can sell you these ultra-processed shakes and ultra-processed meal replacements. They can try and convince you that it's okay to drink sugar as long as you're exercising because, you know, you're going to burn those calories. When you exercise, it's not going to affect the insulin. It's going to increase muscle size. It's going to do other things. They're separate. But the diet industry and the soda industry and the snack food industry doesn't want you to understand that. And the thing is that what I recommend is basically not far off from what your grandmother would recommend. Don't snack all the time. Don't eat all the time. Eat natural foods. There's a period of time that you should eat and the period of time that you shouldn't eat.
Now, another consequence, aside from the hormones, if I'm trying to lose weight, not only are my hormone levels going to be disrupted, but it's also going to have an impact on my metabolic rate. And I think most famously, a while back, there was the US reality show, The Biggest Losers, where contestants competed to lose the most weight. And actually, what happened was their weight loss, which was very dramatic at the time, had long-term consequences for their metabolic rates.
Oh, yeah. So their metabolic rate went way down. So people who would be burning, for example, 3,000 calories a day might go down to like 1,800 a day. You know, you start off burning 3,000 calories a day, and then you eat 3,000 calories a day. You're not gaining or losing weight, but your weight is too high. So then you cut it down to 2,000. That's an important reduction. But your body senses that and puts your metabolic rate down to 1,800. So now you're burning 1,800, but you're eating 2,000. So you're regaining that weight. And then you say, how can that be? Because I'm eating way less. Yes, you are eating way less, but you're burning way less. The problem is that the diets that they follow are mostly focused on calories. There's a whole lot of reasons people eat, and it's not simply hunger and metabolism, but there are things like emotional eating, food addiction. These things are never addressed by things like calories. So if you're eating because you're depressed, we know that you can eat foods that set off the reward centers. So things like highly refined carbohydrates and so on, they'll set off dopamine. Sugar will set off dopamine, which is rewarding to us. So if you're depressed, then you can sort of self-medicate by taking some of these sugary foods and highly processed foods to do it. And that's why people say, oh, you know, they broke up with somebody, they eat a whole tub of ice cream sort of thing, right? To drown their sorrows and all that. Well, that's because they're sort of self-medicating. They're trying to increase their reward because they're so depressed. There are a lot of reasons, and trying to understand the sort of complexity of obesity is important, as opposed to these sort of reductionist people who say, oh, it's about calories. Just watch your calories. Just eat less. Practically every person in the Western hemisphere has done that. The actual success rate of telling somebody to eat less and losing weight long term is abysmally low.
Just going back to the Biggest Losers, you said that their metabolic rate dropped. But it didn't just drop while they were losing weight. What was most worrying was there was a long-term change in their metabolic rate.
Yeah. There's two parts to that. One is that as you lose weight, your metabolic rate should drop. Because again, if you have 200 pounds of tissue, you're going to burn less than 300 pounds of tissue. The other thing is that you're also going to lose muscle mass, because if you're pushing around every day 300 pounds, as opposed to pushing around 200 pounds, you're going to have less muscle. So people always worry, oh, you're going to lose muscle, you should exercise. It's like, well, that's going to help it. But on the other hand, your metabolic rate will naturally go down anytime you have sort of significant weight loss. So sometimes they adjust it, they do a correction factor to try and take that into account because of that difference. So there is always going to be a difference. However, even after like 6 years, when they measured it, their metabolic rates were lower than expected. Because again, if your thermostat, body fat thermostat, is set at a high level, and you're maintaining it through sheer willpower at a low level, your body will take steps to get you to come back up.
So basically, even if I fight the increasing hunger produced by my hormones and I have rigid self-control, the body will just reduce the calories out by lowering my metabolic rate.
Yeah. And you'll notice that most easily by a lower body temperature, because generating body heat is very energy intensive. Say you lose weight, you didn't affect the hormones. You only counted the calories. You didn't change that thermostat. Your body wants to bring it back up. So it'll make you more hungry. If you fight that with sheer willpower, then your body will simply reduce the calories it uses until you gain that weight. So you eat, say you eat 2000 calories in a day. Normally you burn 2000. Now you eat 1500. So you lose a bit of weight. You're happy, but the body says you need to go back up. So if you're not going to eat, I'm going to drop the calories I burned to 1400. So now you're eating 1500, you're burning 1400, and you're gaining weight. That's just physics. Then people say, oh, you're cheating on your diet. So now, of course, this is where you feel cold because you're not using that energy. You feel tired because you're not burning as much. You're hungrier. So you're cold, you're tired, you're hungry, and you're gaining that weight. So at this point, you say, holy, that is not worth it. So you go up to like 1800 calories, and now that weight just comes rushing back on. So you gain all that weight back and maybe a little bit more, right? And that's the whole yo-yo diet thing. It's because you haven't really affected the hormones that control the thermostat.
And possibly your metabolic rate is now slightly lower than it was before you started dieting.
Yeah, yeah, it generally is. The good news is that it can go down, but it can also go back up.
So this sounds like a council of despair, Jason. So if we want to lose weight, we need to set our fat thermostat at a lower body weight, presumably, than our current one. How do we do that?
So a lot of it is controlled by insulin. What you have to say is, well, what are the foods that are going to spike my insulin? It's mostly the highly refined foods. So if you eat natural, unprocessed foods, and this can be vegetarian, this can be meat, fish, all of this stuff. If you eat natural foods, your body is going to respond to it with the natural satiety hormones, which is going to tell you to stop eating at a certain point. And then that's going to adjust your insulin. So what we're doing is we're eating foods that are not exactly natural. Therefore, they have a very unnatural hormone profile, which spikes up your insulin, but then shoves it way down. So then you get hungry again. So, you know, 90 minutes later, you go looking for a fix. So you shoot it up again, then you drop it back down. So cutting down the carbohydrates, but mostly eating natural foods is probably the easiest thing to focus on.
And you're saying that if one eats natural food, you'll be able to push that thermostat down enough.
Yeah, because it'll regulate naturally back down to its sort of normal set, because there's a normal level that it's supposed to be at, just like tigers and lions and sharks and everything. Everybody's got a certain range where it wants to be at. We've moved that range up by eating a lot of these processed, highly processed foods and sugary foods, and we can move it back down by avoiding it. Insulin is one of the things. I mean, there's other things that affect it. We know this because, say, cortisol is another, so chronic stress, for example. We give people prednisone, which is a form of synthetic cortisol. It's used in many different types of diseases like asthma and so on. They gain weight. That's not a secret. Every single person who's taken it and every doctor knows that already. Every nurse knows that. So everybody knows that taking cortisol makes you gain weight. Must be adjusting that upwards. Chronic stress is something that's going to increase your cortisol levels. Poor sleep, for example, could do that because it's a stress on the system. So poor sleep might be something. Exercise is something that tends to release a lot of the cortisol. Cortisol is a stress hormone. The reason that it exists is that when you're under stress, like you see a lion, then cortisol spikes up and then that floods your body with glucose and then you try and run or you fight. So it's giving you the energy. So exercise is going to naturally take that away.
We started our conversation talking about the fact that calorie counting was an oversimplistic approach and not an effective dieting strategy. But are you saying that if you were to diet and you're only using natural food as your diet, then calorie counting would work?
Yeah, you don't need to count calories if you're eating natural foods. Your body, as long as you're listening to your body, it will naturally adjust for that.
Okay, so let's say I start eating a diet which is natural foods. So I suppose I burn about 1,800 calories a day if I'm doing something a little bit active. If I eat less than that, I would then lose weight?
If you eat less than that, you'll start by losing weight and then your body will adjust it so that you get back to that weight. If you eat more, they've done this in overfeeding experiments too. You force somebody to eat too much, you can make them gain weight in the short term, and their body will start burning off more. So it runs both ways. So you have this thermostat, it goes up or down. So when you eat natural foods, what you're trying to do is push that, you know, your thermostat back into its natural range. We all have a range, right? Some people are naturally very, very skinny, and some people are very naturally very, very heavy. So there is a range there. But if you eat natural foods, then it's going to be a lot easier to get that thermostat back into a natural range.
Sure. But if I was on a diet, because I just want to clarify this for people, because I think it is important. If I'm on a diet and I eat natural food, then that might still potentially work.
Yeah, there's other issues, right? So other than the foods, how often are you eating those foods? When are you eating the foods?
Okay, let's say I'm eating a natural diet and I eat three times a day.
Yeah.
And I reduce my calorific intake as well. That might be a successful way of losing weight.
Yeah, you'd still have to look at other factors though, because if you think about what cause the weight gain in the first place. If you have a food addiction, if you have emotional eating, if you have something other than that, a psychological reason for the overeating,
sure.
Then you can't fix that with just saying, I'm going to eat this food. You look at obesity and it actually spreads much like a virus. So if you look at one of the biggest predictors of weight gain is really your friends. And it's because it sets those social norms. So if it's normal for you to eat a certain way, if you go to the United States, for example, in certain parts of the United States, one portion of food is massive. And I've done this because, you know, I live in Toronto. So sometimes I go to certain parts of the US and I'll order a meal and it's like double what I eat. If that becomes normalized as a single serving, then you're going to eat it because we don't stop eating. So children stop eating when they're full. Children are good. As adults, we don't stop eating when we're full. We mostly stop eating when all the food on our plate is gone.
I can run business meetings in the States and I had to have two starters because I just thought there's absolutely no way I can possibly have a starter and a main course. These sizes are bonkers.
Yeah, it's crazy. But on the other hand, recently I went to Asia and I was like, oh, there's nothing to eat here, right? But again, so I wound up getting an extra. I could feel the waiters and all the people at the other tables going, oh, these people are eating so much because we're eating about, like, say, 50% more. But that's what we're used to. So you can get used to a lot of things, but your environment is going to play a huge role. So you go to Japan, where I hear the portion sizes are even smaller, and no wonder they're all thin. Me as an Asian, but living in North America, I'm like, that's not a reasonable portion of food. It's too little. So a lot of our eating cues, a lot of the way that we eat is conditioned. It's not intrinsic. That is, we can change it. We treat obesity like it's an intrinsically physiologic disease, like cancer or something like that, but it's not. I remember when I was very young, we'd have dessert like once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. And then I remember, you know, in high school or college, every day there was dessert. I was like, whoa, you know, this is a lot. So again, it's not that I was necessarily hungry or full or whatever. It was the environment that I was in where I could accept as normal the fact that I almost never ate dessert. And now it's normal to eat dessert every single day. It was an expectation. Well, that's going to have a huge implication for weight. Like there's so many of these environmental cues that you have to look at now and say, well, Can we change that to make yourself more successful? Like, look at your environment, look at the people, look at your habits, because that's what's important.
Now, Jason, you've spent much of your career developing various approaches to fasting. What effect does fasting have on our body set weight?
So fasting does two main things. And one is that it's good. You're not putting in calories and you're allowing your body to burn off calories. And there's actually nothing wrong with that, because for a long time, people said, oh, it's so bad for you, so bad for you, so bad for you. But then the other thing is the psychological thing, which is you're building good habits. You're building things that you can now create a structure around, as opposed to, oh, you can eat whatever you want.
So from what you're saying, Jason, it sounds like perhaps the biggest challenge is the process of re-education, both for the public and your fellow doctors.
Yeah, it's really about changing the conversation around weight to trying to be more about what is actually, you know, physiologically happening and psychologically happening. Because there's a lot there, you know, in terms of habits, in terms of societal norms. So if you don't talk about societal norms, how are you going to influence obesity on a wide scale? Yet you start talking about it and everybody's saying, oh, it's about calories in, calories out. It's like, oh, you know, let's not go backwards.
And that's the trouble, isn't it? People here will go to the GP and the GP will say, eat less, move more.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're disappointed that they don't lose the weight.
It's true. It's because the thing about fasting, for example, is that you can create it into a habit, right? So say you don't eat breakfast most of the time. That becomes your habit. Now you don't get hungry at breakfast because you don't eat breakfast. I've done that because I actually stopped eating breakfast in medical school. So as it becomes a habit, what's important is that it requires no thought and no willpower. So creating that habit is intensely powerful. Just like creating this community of people around you is intensely powerful in terms of weight gain, weight loss. And it's the same for anything. You know, when I was younger, I did canoeing. I'd do 3 hours a day of canoeing, 6 days a week. One of the days would usually be the full day because it was a race. That's a lot. And on the outside, you'd say, wow, how can you do that? Well, if I had to do it myself, I probably wouldn't. But I was with a team, I was with a group of people that were doing the same thing. So therefore, it wasn't that difficult. It was just what I did. Eating is much the same. If you are eating sort of Japan portion, you know, meals in America, you'll feel quickly as an outcast and you're going to see everybody else having these massive portions and you're not going to be able to maintain your weight. So Asian people who come to the United States or Canada, they all gain weight. But back in Japan, they don't. So what's the difference between a Japanese person in Japan and a Japanese person in America? It's not genes. The genes are the same. It's the environment. If it's about societal norms, which does affect calories, yes, everything sort of eventually goes through calories. That's the proximate cause. It's not the root cause. The root cause is that the societal norms are far out of line with where it should be. Then you say, okay, well, let's change them where we can. You know, you can do that within your family, for example. You say, well, I'm going to start cutting portion sizes down. If you're a business person, you say, okay, no more food in meetings. I don't think anybody would object particularly. No food outside of the cafeteria, no eating at your desk. No more of these birthday parties where they have all this cake that nobody really wants to eat, but you don't want to look like the, you know, jackass who's not celebrating, right? Why don't you just change that? You can celebrate people's birthday. You just don't have cake. And some of it's changing already. I see it in the hospitals and stuff. So,
well, I was shocked when I first went to an American hospital and found a McDonald's inside an American hospital, which you see in the UK now, but you didn't used to.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely true. You go to any hospital in North America, really, and it's like a food court in there, truthfully. There's coffee shops, there's donuts, there's fast food. People like to think about it like a willpower disease. It's simple. It allows you to blame the victim. So the people who are in charge don't have to say, hey, we don't understand obesity. So think about the people who are the thought leaders, the scientific leaders. Obesity is going way up and up and up. So clearly they're not doing very well. So all the dietitians, the doctors, they're not doing well. They haven't understood the problem fully. Or they can turn around and blame the patient. You don't have enough willpower. You shouldn't be eating. It's all about calories. It's your fault. You're not exercising enough. Well, what do you think they chose? They chose to blame the patient. A lot easier than trying to do the hard work of saying, oh, where did we go wrong? What can we do better? They just turned around and started blaming all the people. Otherwise, you could put into effect policies that would limit things like sugar and so on. And they've done it in some places, certainly.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for talking today. Sounds like there's a lot of change needed.
Yes, definitely. Thanks so much.
Lovely talking to you, Jason. Thank you.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the podcast. And if you've enjoyed the show, if you could leave a review, that would be much appreciated. It really helps. Many thanks for listening. Bye for now.